Well, having reached stop five here, having a little bit of a break, and looking at the plants that there seem to be more and more of as we sort of walk along here. I mean, how on earth do these plants actually grow in the shingle?
Well, most can't grow actually on the shingle. The only ones that can are specialised plants called pioneers, and we've got a few here. We've got yellow-horned poppy, sea spurge, and there's a kale, I think it is, over there, a cabbage plant anyway of some kind. And those can live actually on the shingle. They're adapted for life on the shingle, and they're very rare that plants can. They've got long, very long roots for getting as much water as possible and holding their position. They've got waxy leaves to stop water loss and store water in the leaves.
So can they cope with the seawater washing over them?
Yeah, that's the waxy leaves, the seawater doesn't damage them. But as you go up, you're getting more and more plants growing on the ridge. What happens is that you get what they call a succession of plants. The pioneers come first. When the pioneers die, they start to produce a soil. The humus from the dead plant starts to break down and produce the soil. And as you go up over the ridge, the soil gets deeper and more plants can grow. And you can see up here, if we come in about 5 metres from the edge of the shingle, you can see you've got more plants growing. There's things like sea campion, some dandelions, sea beet. Notice most of these are sea something or other.
Very, very specific plants,
yeah,
for the
maritime communities that can withstand salt and desiccation. But as you go up, you're getting into more normal sort of meadow plants, the sort you get in your back garden, like dandelions and clovers and things.
And even on the other side of the road there, some trees.
Yeah, it's right the other side. You've got bushes, there's a shrub community, and then even some small trees, willows and things. It never quite reaches what we call a climax community. It never reaches a proper deciduous woodland because it's too harsh here. It's a lovely day today, but on a stormy day you'll get salt spray going right over onto the lake, and the plants have to be able to survive.
So as well as all of the green plants around here, we've also got this yellow sort of moss looking stuff on the rocks. What's that?
Well, those are pioneers as well. Those are lichens on the bare rock. And lichens are really interesting because they're a combination of an alga and a fungus. It's a symbiotic relationship between an alga and a fungus. And the alga photosynthesizes and produces oxygen and sugar. And the fungus uses the oxygen and produces carbon dioxide, which the alga uses. So they kind of live in harmony together. But they can live on bare rocks, and you get them anywhere. You get them on paving stones and roofs and things.
Yeah, because usually the ones that I've seen are green, but these are very bright.
Well, it's
here,
not a moss.
They?
It is a lichen, and lichens can be any colour. I mean, grey or green or yellow, red, some of them, black, all sorts.
There are also some lovely flowers here. Here they are.
The white ones.
The white flowers. What are these?
That's sea campion.
Okay.
Now we're here in April, and there's not a lot in flower at the moment. We've got sea campion is in flower. This little white flowers here. That's over there. There's a thing called Danish scurvy grass, which has got these small little white flowers as well. But most of the and there's a few dandelions. Most of the flowering, the real peak is in May, through to the summer. And things are only just starting to take off now. A lot of these plants are members of the cabbage family. In fact, humans have taken cabbage plants from coastal plants like this. So you get sea radish and sea beet and things like this, which have been cultivated and turned into food plants. In fact, you have to actually put salt on some domesticated cabbage plants too, because they grow best in salty soil.
But over there, we saw the sea kale, I think
that's
you said
kale, yeah,
what
yeah.
It was. But it's covered in snails. Now, I don't think they really like salt, do they?
No, they must be. I don't know. That plant is absolutely covered in snails. There must be 50 snails on that.
Yeah.
How they get there, I've no idea, because they've got to get across 5 yards of shingle to get to that plant. But they've done it, they seem to be eating it, so...
Shows how adventurous these animals can be sometimes.
Absolutely.
Those bushes there, I've got loads of this. This is sea plantain. And you can see there's about four different plantain species along here.
Yeah.
You can see this is the sea one because it's got the fleshy leaves.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's very thick leaves. I'm just pulling one open part now. It's got thick, waxy leaves and they're quite narrow. And that's to stop water loss. Now, if you go up onto the top, there's ordinary plantain. There's the broadleaf plantain, which you'll get in your garden, and a ribwort plantain, the narrowleaf plantain. And those are not so well adapted as these.
When these things are growing on here, does that actually sort of help stop sort of the natural erosion of the shingle in any way?
Oh, I mean, that holds the shingle together and forms the soil, yeah. Yeah, so it does hold it all together. You can stabilise, in some parts of the coast, they've actually stabilised sandbanks by deliberate planting of particular species, and it holds them together. Marram grass, for example, is planted on some coastal dunes to hold it together, and it grows there naturally.
Yeah.
But, you know, you kind of conserve it and it will hold the...
Is that because of the root networks?
Yeah.
Holds everything in?
Roots are often deep. And
right.
We've got grasses growing here. There's couch or couch grass. That's that one I'm looking at there. It's got sort of spiky bits. It's all looking a bit dead here at the moment. But yeah, the grasses here, these things coming out of this shingle. That's another pioneer growing between the sea spurge, which is the fleshy-leaved spurge plant. Those are the flowers there, the yellow flowers of the spurge. And... this has got a very extensive root network. If you pull this up, it's the roots go down, you know, and spread out through the shingle.
Right.
And hold it all together. Because there's no soil here, it's just shingle.
Yeah, and how deep is it, the shingle?
Well,
as deep as the
deep
sea.
As the, yeah,
that's a
yeah.
dumb question.
I mean, meters of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, actually, in some places it does get swept away completely and you get sand and rocks and things underneath.
Hmm.
So it's several metres deep.
Yeah.
But up there, there's the soil. If you go further up the ridge, you've got soil and it's starting to get better conditions.
Right.
So why do they grow down here at all?
They've not got any competition from other plants. So they can grow without competition. So when it does rain, they gather up the rain quickly, absorb all the rain they can, and then wait till the next rain storm, and they don't the soil never stays wet. There is no soil, it doesn't stay wet, so they don't you know, they have to make do what they can get. They don't have to outcompete other plants to grow, whereas if you go into the meadow community at the top, you've got dozens of different species all battling for nutrients and water and everything, and then you end up with that one dominant thing like gorse.
We're going to walk along the rest of the ridge into the village of Tor Cross, and apparently there's something interesting in the car park.